You can come in front. Would anyone like to share anything about the meditation or ask anything?
I would like to know when the thinking mind starts, you know, then it just races ahead. So how does one stop that racing?
The thinking mind is the ego. So who is aware that the thinking mind is racing? You're aware, right? My mind is racing. So wouldn't you say that awareness is apart from the thinking mind? That is why it is aware that the thinking mind is racing. The ego, which is the thinking mind, wants to stop the thinking mind. Is it possible? Because the ego is the thinking mind. So even this want to stop the thinking mind can only be acknowledged in the light of awareness. Otherwise, there will be frustration. People can't sleep at night when the mind is very active. You can't get sleep because thoughts are racing. And what this teaching is doing is imbuing the ego with the total acceptance of the will of God and the concept that nobody is the doer of their actions, including you. So you are not doing the excessive thinking. The excessive thinking is happening. That is the first step, to disidentify from the stream of excessive thinking. It is not me, because if it was me, I wouldn't be aware of it. It can't be helped. Some minds are very active. The problem is that the mind which is thinking a lot is thinking either about the dead past or an imaginary future most of the time. So to contemplate on what is it that I'm thinking a lot about, why is my thinking mind racing, to ask oneself these questions and to see what is the cause of that, and to understand if there is another way to see that which is disturbing me. What this teaching is doing is, by and by, through explaining the concepts of Advaita, it is mitigating this thinking mind till it reaches a still point. So for example, let's say you got angry in the moment today or irritated. Now the problem is you keep thinking about that. But if you realize even you're not the doer of your actions, it comes up, you look at it, you understand the lessons to be learned, and you let it go. So you're not judging yourself for the rest of the day. Why did I become angry? Why was I irritated? There's a contemplation and it is released. It could be what someone said, what happened, a war in the world, anything. So the sage, it's not that the sage is a blank slate and no thoughts come, but that thought is not taken delivery of, and that does not convert into incessant thinking. That is the difference.
There's another one I want to ask you, another question.
Can you please close the door? Yes.
Another question that I want to ask. I'll soon be traveling. Now, my mind is just thinking of all the negative things possible.
Like what will happen to me when I go to the airport, I sit in the plane.
Some
people are prone to be anxious and fearful. And that is based on their childhood conditioning and their innate nature. Others are not. For others, it's a walk in the park. So firstly, to accept one's fear, accept one's nature, and then what happens? It does not mean fear will disappear, but it means that in spite of the fear, in spite of this nature which is coming up constantly, you will still move ahead. It will not cripple you because you have not judged it. And what is fear? Fear of the future. See, you can regret the past. You don't fear the past because it's gone. But you fear the future. What will happen to me? I'm afraid. When I was traveling in my teenage years, I was very afraid. Will the immigration officer question me? Will the security check do this, do that? That is the mind. It is afraid. And if one has a childhood which is a fearful childhood, where the parents have instilled fear into the child, the fear of God, that child really suffers and carries that fear into the later years. That cannot be undone. So, to accept this, that the hand of God is above me, thy will be done. What happens is, by and by, through surrender and grace, through surrender and grace and trust. I gave a talk on love, trust, and surrender at the retreat. You will find, despite these limitations of yours, you are navigating through life. So you are no longer obsessed with turning off the thinking mind because you know it's futile, it's going to do its job, but you still find yourself navigating your way through life in spite of it. Then it loses its charge. See, what we are focused on grows. The more we focus on the thinking mind, the more of a monster it will become. And then we don't look at the joyful aspects of life. You're probably going to meet your son, are you?
No,
You're
no.
just going on a holiday.
Yes,
See,
going.
something that should be joyful becomes stressful. Thy will be done. I used to have a friend, we are no longer in touch. She was an interior designer. And she was doing very well. But when I would go and have a cup of coffee with her at her office, I found her highly strung. She was screaming and shouting at the carpenters, the contractors, the electricians, because they would all converge there to discuss the projects. And she told me that this is what happens when you're a woman dealing with a male force. We have to be aggressive. I didn't say anything to her. I didn't ask her anything. She was just herself giving me the justification for her behavior, which is fair. But I just told her, I said, you know, when people come to you to do up their homes, there's so much aspiration, there's so much joy because they want their homes to be nice, bright, beautiful. And if this is the mindset of yours and your workshop and your workforce, taking this whole battle into someone's home in order to do it up as a business, what are you bringing to the table? So she was not too happy when I told her that. But I said, this is, I said, since I've come, there's just screaming and shouting. Everyone's blaming each other. The painter's blaming the electrician. Electrician is blaming the carpenter. You're shouting at all of them. That poor person's home, whom you are doing up, they have no idea the level of negativity you're taking into their house. So you see, this thinking mind becomes a monster when it comes to dealing with people, dealing with situations, screaming and shouting to be heard, to force one's point of view. These are all aspects of the ego. And the ego is afraid to die. The body has no idea about birth and death. That is why it is so clear, even our deep sleep is our experience, or rather non-experience, that the only objection to death and fear of death is the ego, which disappears in deep sleep. So, absence of ego means no fear of death. Imagine if there was no ego in the waking state, you would not fear anything. Because in your deep sleep, do you fear anything? In deep sleep, we don't fear anything. So that which fears death in the waking state is the problem. Pure being, pure impersonal consciousness functioning has no problem with death, does not fear death. That consciousness which took birth and is right here, right now, is not afraid to die. But this ego which has hardened in the waking state, that is the, it's such a beautiful piece of fiction because it disappears in deep sleep. And then it comes in the waking state and says, this is me and I am afraid to die. That is what happens. So to surrender, thy will be done. To trust, thy will be done. And to love the Lord. That is when this thinking mind starts losing its grip.
In this deep sleep, when you say, we say there's no ego, so there is, that time there is no awareness
Only in waking stop you become aware, and then you recognize saying that I had a deep sleep, I didn't dream at all, I didn't.
There's
So where
no
is that
awareness of
awareness?
the ego. Awareness is there.
So in deep sleep there is an awareness?
Yes. Otherwise you'd see awareness not of the ego. Awareness is unaware of itself as awareness and is aware of itself as I am being. In
so
the waking
that is
state,
the existence.
Yes. In the waking state you're aware that you exist. And then comes the me. I exist as me, this body, this mind.
So that is ego.
That is the ego. Delivery of the awareness to a point that this is me is the ego. The I am
is all constant.
Is the I am, pure existence. That is why my teacher would say it is the only truth, the impersonal awareness of being. Now in the sage, that awareness is there in the deep sleep state also. In us common folk, we are in slumber, which is a form of ignorance. But it is very important, because what Seema is doing is speaking on behalf of all of us, because we all think excessively. The only difference is there's unconscious living, where people are living their lives thinking all the time without being aware of it. They're just on a wheel, like a mouse on a wheel going round and round. And there's someone in whom this awareness has kicked in that, my God, this is happening all the time. Now that person has entered the field of potential to discover peace despite the thinking mind. That is what happens. Oh, sorry, you want to ask something? Sure.
So regarding meditation, when my thought subsides after a while, I feel the attention wants to move to the sensations in the body. And it's very painful because there are many contractions, and it kind of keep moving to the next contraction and the next contraction. And I don't know what to do, like, shall I feel those contractions fully or get entangled with that, or take my attention back?
No, but are these contractions painful?
Yeah. Not painful, very irritating.
Irritating?
Yeah.
Because and, they disturb your meditation?
Yeah, and they create emotions, bad emotions, like they make me angry, feel frustrated at the level of emotion and body both. And then they try to bring me back to thoughts, and sometimes they do. So I'm back to thoughts. So I can't decide like where to place the attention.
See, the attention in this meditation, why I keep emphasizing this is because there are different techniques of meditation, is on being, just on awareness, on witnessing. It is not about placing attention on a point, because whatever sensation there is an awareness of it.
Okay. Yeah.
You see? So it does happen in meditation, no matter how comfortably you're sitting, things come up.
Yeah.
Because they are being allowed to. In the waking state, we are suppressing all these things. In meditation, what is buried deep, deep inside starts coming up. Why is it coming up? Its sole purpose is not to irritate you. It is coming up to be released, to be let go of. You see? So depending on what past practices you have done, what is your spiritual journey till now, whether you followed any form of yoga, you have to ask yourself, what have I indulged in, what have I done, and has that had an impact on this body? That only you will know.
No, I didn't do any of that practice, but I just sit quiet for a long time, like sometimes 4 hours, 5 hours, and just stay in awareness. But at some point of time, I began to get aware of the contractions more and more. Like, I'm not disturbed by thoughts so much. Actually, contractions in my body. There are heavy energy movements and so on. So, Yeah, of course, they pull me back to thoughts sometimes, but I'm very aware of the thoughts. That's not that great problem. Like when I started to stay present, that was my only practice to stay present.
But 3-4 hours is a lot. Do you do any work? How old are you?
I'm 40.
And do you have a job?
Yeah, I work as business analyst.
So you're able to do that and meditate for 3-4 hours?
Yeah, so I live in Germany, so there's very much life, work-life balance. So I kind of done at 6. And then I live alone, so I just sit.
See, all contractions, all discomfort comes from thought. It's not just to say that we are not having too many thoughts, but contractions are there.
Mm-hmm.
The body gets entangled, gets knotted up. Now, for example, if you're following the path of a Kriya Yoga, which is a breathwork practice, then that breathwork, the job of the breathwork is to start untangling these knots. That is what happens. Because there's the subtle body system, and different people are blocked in different levels of the subtle body, which is referred to as chakras. Some could be blocked, most are blocked at the lower chakras, lower 3. So, without getting too much into that, some people are drawn to the path of Kriya Yoga, which is any form of Kriya. Some are drawn to Bhakti Yoga, some are drawn to Gyan Yoga, some are drawn to Karma Yoga. Actually, it's a combination of all, but what you are innately drawn to, if it is this inquiry, then this quality of surrender, witnessing, and trust will see you through the process. And to tell yourself, I relax and release, I relax and release, because so much is caught up in this system. Even our past sanskars are right here, right now. And this, how long is it going to go on for? You see, when something is learned, you don't have to learn it again. Once you learn to drive, you don't have to learn driving again. Once you learn to swim, you don't have to learn swimming again.
Yeah.
So, all this has to be allowed without being judged. That is the contemplation, that is the sadhana. To see where in my waking state, forget this 3 hours. Are you at peace in the waking state?
Yes. There are a few things which disturbs me in the waking state. For example, I find myself explaining way too much sometimes, and it drains me, but I cannot stop myself, and these are one of the struggles.
You have to ask yourself, why am I explaining myself too much?
I did, and there are many answers to it. For example, there's some low self-esteem, like I feel the need to be right or understood correctly. Or I also feel guilty that the other person, I hurt other person. And this drives me a lot to explain too much. But I also see my pattern that it has never helped me. The other person maybe do not have the capacity to understand, or maybe I do not have the capacity to make him understand. So it's actually not helping either of us, explaining too much, just draining energy from both sides. So one of the waking state struggle, I'm telling you, there are a few others, but many have been resolved in the past time. I also struggle to accept my true nature, which is more not very confident. I'm a bit shy and introvert, but the identity I created was very outgoing, talking too much and being very confident and some playing some kind of role. I also see through it, and I don't accept myself fully, for example, that it's like I'm not confident, for example.
And so all this, what you're describing, is giving me contractions in meditation.
Yeah.
So that is why I say face the living dream of life. Look at your daily living, look at your reactions and your attitude to life. Make that the meditation. Why do I talk too much? I'm trying to convince someone of my point of view.
I feel, yeah, that's as well, and also feel restless at the level of body in the wakeful state. Like,
of course. But when I lose all expectation of trying to convince the other of my point of view, I express myself once. Whether that person is to be convinced or not is his destiny, God's will, cosmic law.
So is that what you convey, that if the waking state problems are gradually resolved, then these contract...
Yes.
Okay, they are related.
Absolutely. They are completely related. Now, some people feel a contraction here, some people feel it here, some people feel it here. This is the chakra of expression. This is of relationships. This is the heart. Different people feel contractions in different places. You are sensitive, so you know about the contractions. Most of us don't. We are living our lives in ignorance. But most people are living in a contracted state. So to understand what is my misconception about life, does life owe me? Why do I feel I have to convince people all the time? I mean, am I trying to play God? And am I so invested in my own story that I have to repeat it 100 times? I have to ask myself these questions. Am I that important? The world will go on without me. Things will happen the way they are meant to happen. So whether it's low self-esteem or this or that, it's all pretty irrelevant. When I start seeing that nobody is the doer of their actions, neither others nor me, it also means I didn't make myself shy. I didn't make myself an introvert. God did. A higher power gave me conditioning which made me the way I am, which I'm trying to undo because I feel it's wrong. These are the knots. But to surrender and accept thy will be done, then the knots start getting untied. Sometimes it happens in a flash, like the knot which Alexander the Great came across. Nobody could untie it, the Gordian knot. And it was prophesied that the one who did would be king and an emperor. And he was a young lad. He thought about it. How the hell am I going to be successful if so many have failed before me? The knot was still there. So he took out his sword and cut it. And he became the emperor. So sometimes it happens in a flash that my peace cannot be found in the flow of life, but my attitude to life. And my attitude to life means my attitude to the other, whoever the other may be. When I start seeing this, I judge people less and less, and I judge myself less and less. So an acceptance of people the way they are, the way God created them, means an acceptance of myself the way God created me. Then I stop being so violent that I have to repeat myself many times to the same person. I see the futility of it all. What is meant to happen will happen. What is not meant to happen won't happen. All I can do is try. That is all. See how the knots start dissolving. You see, why are the knots dissolving? Because now one is seeing with the third eye, not the eyes of duality. The eyes of duality will always face this problem, this battle of for and against. It is a never-ending battle. I will always see polaric opposites. People who are nice to me, people who are not nice to me. Pleasure, pain, rich, poor, up, down, black, white, front, back, night, day, sun, moon. This is duality, which we are born into. But we are struggling with it because we are sitting on one end of these polar opposites. With the third eye, we rise above this dualistic nature of duality and rest in the eye of wisdom. When we rest in the eye of wisdom, then we discover peace. When we see the hand of God above everyone in our life, all our relationships get resolved because we are no longer having relationships with individuals whom we are trying to convince, trying to love, try to be loved. When we see the hand of God above all individuals in our life, then our relationship is with God. So relationship issues are resolved. You will no longer feel a contraction here, if you're feeling it here. This is the seat of power and relationships. You see, so don't focus too much on the contractions. focus more on understanding life, daily living. What is the ego? How does it operate? How does it sustain itself? Why does it always want to be heard and proven right? Look at those things. And in that contemplation, this will all unravel. This is the path of Gyan Yoga. If you are drawn to breathwork, follow a Kriya Yoga, which will help you clear the blocks, make the nadis clean. If you're drawn to that, explore that. That's another valid path. But because you are here, I'm talking to you about the path of knowledge. But the end goal, the end game is something as basic and simple as Sukha Shanti. You are focusing on the effect of a disturbed mind. This teaching is focusing on the cause so that the effects stop taking effect. You see? When do you go back to Germany?
I think in April. So it's winter there, like 3-4 months now. So I prefer to stay in nice weather.
So you are staying in Bombay because you have family here?
No, my family is in Bihar. So now because the winter started there, I moved. I was in Osho Ashram for last 2-3 weeks. I wanted to attend your Pune Satsang as well, but it was just full so fast.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I moved from Pune to here yesterday for today's Satsang. And I might go to Chennai to Krishnamurti Ashram. I'll just stay there. I'm going for the first time. And then I may go to Coimbatore. I don't know. Maybe nice weather or maybe come to Mumbai again for your Satsang. So I don't have any plan.
Nice not to have plans.
Yeah.
Go with the flow.
Yeah.
Go with the flow.
Yes, thank you.
So before I asked my question, you kind of answered it, but I'll still go ahead and say it. I just wanted to know how important is a method? Like, is it going to happen just with intellectual, like conversation or just learning about the theory of it or some sort of an explanation which comes with words, or do we need to do something? Is there anything that needs to be done about it on a physical level as well?
You see, it starts at the intellectual level because the invitation is to view things differently from what you have been. But if it has appealed to you, that means you already resonate with it. See, the mind, the intellect, and the heart are just conceptual segregations. If I tell you nobody is the doer of their actions, you could reject it. You can say absolutely not, people are the doers of their actions, and you wouldn't set foot here again. Correct? Mm. The fact that you have set foot here again and again means you have accepted it at some level.
Right.
But you need convincing.
Mm-hmm.
Now the intellect has accepted it. But what you don't know is your heart has accepted it. The intellect and mind is just figuring its way back home. What is the heart? It is the heart of awareness, not the physical heart. So at some level, you're telling yourself this all makes sense, but it should permeate into each moment of my day. That is the way the intellect sees it in the duration of time. Till the day when someone comes in front of you and upsets you, anger may arise in the moment, so be it. But immediately, the involvement is cut off and you see the hand of God above the event and that person and yourself. Then you would say the understanding is in the heart, because I harbor no ill will for this person, no judgment, no condemnation, no criticism. Then that means the understanding is in the heart. So that is a process because of conditioning since childhood is so hardwired, it takes time to undo. But if we are honest and ask ourselves, why are we drawn to this teaching? Why do we keep coming back to it? It means we have accepted it at the core. The mind is just trying to figure it out, navigate through life, understand it. Why am I repeating my patterns again and again and so on and so forth? That's what happens. But having said that, it is a misconception that you don't have to do anything. If you feel your progress is not happening And progress is only measured by peace, more and more peace, by and by, by and by. You have to ask yourself, what aspect of this teaching have I not surrendered fully to? We may say it is God's will, but even we have to do our bit. It takes two hands to clap. So we have to be honest with ourselves.
If I do something or I don't do something, it's anyways not up to me, right? It's just happening anyways.
Yes.
So it anyways comes back to, like, if you do anything, it's anyways not up to you. So it's just happening.
That is true, but in daily living, you have to take decisions.
Right, but
you have to function.
Right. Doesn't that kind of leave no room for conversation?
It leaves no room for thinking. Incessant, unnecessary thinking. It leaves no room for that. You have been conditioned a certain way. If a friend of yours asks you for a view on politics or on a movie you saw, are you going to say, what's the point? No room for conversation. Everything happens anyway. Thy will be done. You're not the doer, I'm not the doer. And you'll sit. It doesn't work like that, no? You're a conditioned being. You have a view. You've seen a movie which you liked. You express yourself. Knowing you don't have to convince your friend that it's a good movie. He may not have liked it. The problem is there. If he says, I think it's a crappy movie, you don't get upset. Because he's not trained his guns at you. He's expressing his view based on his likes and dislikes. So you don't take it personally. That is non-doership.
Maybe I'm struggling with this a little bit, but by and by as it seeps in, it's just coming to a point where I really have nothing to say to anybody.
That is definitely a phase. That is definitely a phase which one goes through, because you do see how quite irrelevant this living dream of life is. That happens because it is no longer as important as it was earlier. But then you come back to a point, the middle path of the Buddha, not too tight, not too loose, where you will navigate through life with the understanding, knowing that everything cancels each other out in the final analysis. So you're no longer attached to things, you're no longer averse to things like you used to be. You are not rattled anymore. So this phase introduces you to deep peace, but you don't drown in it. You have to be a functional human being, but you see it with the third eye now, the eye of wisdom. So you're not swayed like you used to be swayed earlier. Your equilibrium, the still point, is what's holding you. You're out of the game. Your preference is for silence, no doubt. You probably won't be able to navigate a social setting where people are just talking about the clothes they wear, the things they shop for and all that, because it's too mundane for you now. But you will bless them all and excuse yourself from there. So be it. So the hold the mundane has on you will evaporate. But you still have to live your life. Not only you still have to live your life, but when you live a life of peace and harmony, equanimity and calm, and total surrender, grace starts flowing, and that grace might get you to do things you didn't do earlier. That can also happen. So it's not a sense of despondency and fatalism. The ego feels that because it sees how helpless it truly is. Think of that one person or that one event you've been constantly hammering for the last 20 years and how futile your hammering is. God is waiting to show you the futility of it all. That is the breaking of the ego. You know, there is a book coming out. Someone in his 20s, late 20s, he went through a full-blown Kundalini awakening. All aspects of it, the full spectrum. And he saw it through, because it can be quite a challenging journey, because it really brings up a lot of things. What made him see it through was surrender, trust, and grace. So in our lives, our churning is whatever disturbs our peace. When we start looking at that in a new light, by and by, we are less and less disturbed. Supposing you had an issue with money and you have less money and someone steals your money, it disturbs you. It will disturb anyone. But you are no longer obsessed about hating the person who stole your money. You accept this money was meant to go, it went. It gave me hurt. That is all accepted. But the individual through whom the event happened has become irrelevant. You see? Otherwise, all our lives we are pinning accusations and responsibility on individuals in our lives doing things. And we live our whole life like that till the last breath. Can you imagine you die and this is shown to you? What the hell did you do all your life? I was appearing as all forms and you forgot that. And you played out this battle with individuals. And you say, how the hell did I do that? It was so obvious that people are not the doers of their actions. That is the Maya. And you yourself will be astounded what the hell happened. So this teaching is breaking this Maya while you're right here, right now. And it's doing it in a gentle way. It's holding the hand of the ego, walking with it along the beach till the ego is dissolved in the ocean without even knowing it. So it will happen because we all know what it is to be at peace. If that is what we want, thy will be done. The qualities of the self are peace, silence, restfulness, clarity, because the disturbance is of the ego, the noise is of the ego. So this not wanting to say anything means that has been touched. But that cannot operate like this in daily living. Then where's the joy of life and living? It will become a very boring and vapid way of living. The joy of being, the child is so joyful, just being, that has to be rediscovered also. And it could be any small thing which gives you joy. It could be as mundane as just sitting on Marine Drive looking at the sea, but you feel joyful. It is not ki abhi chalo baat khatam ho gaya, now tata bye bye, now let's go. No, that ananda translates not as bliss, but as deep contentment. Deep contentment. That is rediscovered. Ananda. Deep contentment. You're content. So at the end of your life, you say, I lived it well by God's grace, without ruffling too many feathers, in mostly a peaceful way, give and take a few situations. And at the end of it, I wish well upon everyone in my life, especially those who troubled me the most. Because as Goldsmith would say, it's too easy to pray for your friends and loved ones. You know where you stand once you start praying for your enemies. Then you know whether the teaching has gone to the heart. Otherwise, me and mine, bas, khush, happy. No. Consciousness is all there is. It is not selective. It is all there is. That is the final understanding. What a beautiful journey of discovery. It's really, we are rediscovering the child in us. That is the day of rejoicing. Some can't imagine it. How can I rejoice in this lifetime? A lifetime of pain and suffering. There's no question of rejoicing. Many of us have that life experience. But to realize all this was to learn. If there was nothing to learn, we wouldn't be here. We are all in it together in the classroom of life. So simple. And this particular lineage is a householder lineage. It is not a sadhu lineage. So this teaching is not one which will encourage you to go into an ashram and spend the rest of your life. If your sanskars are like that, so be it. So then one is very happy going into the Himalayas and wearing ochre robes and leading a simple life. There's no judgment on that. But this is the householder way. It is Krishna's way. You've been assigned a role. You play the role. Engage with the world. But be not of it. Male or female doesn't matter. Whatever your role is, it is. So fulfill it to the best of your ability. May sound like a cliche. But when your thinking mind is at peace, then only can you fulfill your role to the best of your ability. That is what happens. I am here, I am in a situation, in life, in a city, in a family. I have to deal with it and find my peace through that dealing. That is the sadhana. So let me tell you, it is far tougher than going into an ashram and sitting. That is easy. This is a tough sadhana. Why? Because as Sai Baba said, this is about dissolving rinanubandhan, seeing all your attachments, bondages, relationships. He didn't say it in these words, but he emphasized on rinanubandhan. Do you know, he told someone he could see their past lives for 72 generations. Can you imagine the rinanubandhan? Can you imagine how much we are creating in this life of rin? How are we creating it? Blame, condemnation, ill will, malice, jealousy, envy, spite, hatred. We are perpetuating the bandhan. We are digging the well deeper and deeper in our ignorance. And we keep living ignorant lives. So this is the householder way.
When you said about praying for people who do you wrong, and I had some such person in life who had betrayed on a very, very high level. And I went through a whole year of resentment is a small word. It was so much anger, so much darkness in me, and revenge. The feeling of revenge was so strong. This is a decade ago, very strong. And everybody said, no, you must go and, you know, make up and all. But I took the path of not even letting that person know that I know what I know. Totally, the person was unaware of what I know. But I had to deal with my own darkness. So I went through a year of that darkness. And then I realized that, no, this is not me. I have to get out of this. So I was contemplating that I should pray for this person. I should go and talk to this person. But I said, it's better to finish the account here, not to start a new account. So I wanted to put an end, bank khali kar do, that way. No more accounting. So I laid all the darkness, you know, it is not physically, but I laid it all at my guru's feet. I said, I do not know how to deal with this. I do not want it. I have always given you the best, but this is my worst. And please take it away from me. Do what you can do. I want to be free. And that very moment, I was flying. I was so free, I was flying. So I, on my level, I finished that account. So when you say that pray for the person who has done you wrong, hurt you, then are you not starting a new bank account with that person? Dena lena dono mein bank account shuru hota hai na. If I have closed it on that level, should I be... Because I don't feel the need now, because I'm not hurting anymore. I'm out of it. But is it that I should pray for that person?
May I say something from my
yes.
understanding? That means when she says I told the guru.
Yeah. So that was her total surrender to that guru.
Yeah.
And then her mind was at peace.
Yeah.
Would think of yes, because the whole burden was put on this. Which Shraddha and Bhakti.
Yes, because
whatever.
She said she
yeah.
could not handle it, so yes. she offered it to the Guru.
So with the, that is the surrender.
That is
right?
the surrender. Yeah. See, it depends on what you mean by praying. What I mean by praying is not praying for an end.
No.
What I mean is wishing well even for those who have troubled you.
I pray for peace of that person.
Yes.
If that person gets peace, they are not going to bother me. I pray. Honestly. Yeah, yeah. All negativity has to go away somewhere. So you pray that ye happy rahega, ye peaceful rahega.
100%. This is it.
I work on it. And
no, absolutely.
We've gone through ups and downs in life.
A lot of ups and downs.
No, he hit the nail on the head. You pray for people's peace because we know that what it is not to be peaceful. So we don't want to wish on others that you don't be peaceful. So he hit the nail on the head. That is the prayer. Prayer for peace. So that's what I mean. Not praying for something or someone with an outcome.
He does that, but my method is a little different. That once
For my understanding, I have black and white. I'm not gray anywhere. So,
but that's the whole point. I think we have to meet again. This is all about the black and white only.
Yeah, but if I have closed a chapter...
Who are you to close a chapter? Who are you to open a chapter?
For my side.
Let God open it and close it.
Put it to it.
But are you listening?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Are you hearing or are you listening?
I'm listening. I fight with him and I get my answers.
I have a little poem.
Oh, sure.
Oh, wow.
So, it might be a funny poem. It is about my daily living. Sorry for the long pauses in advance.
No, long pauses. Time is up.
Okay. Waking up happens for me, and suddenly I am here again, inside a body, inside a world. The first thought rises, oh no. Once again, I have woken up. Then Guru voice came and said, do what you feel you should do. I bow down to God for sending me back into this prison. And I tell myself, now I don't want to do anything, not even get out of bed. Yet the body rises. I find myself moving, answering nature's call. I did not make. I say it's okay. I didn't choose this, but now I did not want to do anything. Then hunger comes, hands reach for food, and eating happens. And again I say, it's okay. This too is not in my control, but now I don't want to do anything. Then thoughts appear and with them work. I watch myself doing, deciding and acting. I say again, it's okay. I can't control this either. But now I don't want to do anything really. Then tiredness arrives. I found myself resting and then boredom follows. And suddenly there is walking, singing, dancing, life entertaining itself. Slowly I see it, just as I cannot control myself, the universe cannot control itself either. Evening falling on its own, night comes without asking. I whisper, it's okay, I couldn't control the day, but now I don't want to do anything. Then sleep arrives, body fades, world disappears, and one last thought remains, it's okay, I can't control this either.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
I think this was for you. Very beautiful. That's what my teacher would say. You think this teaching says that you're not the doer, so you just lie in bed. It won't happen. You'll have to go to the bathroom at some point.
Yeah.